You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to the ladies who lunch, and here we are. And now you know this place, Sardi's.
Yes.
How many wonderful celebrations have we had here over the years?
So many.
Now, have you guys met each other before today? Did you know each other?
I just met both of these lovely
ladies. Isn't that amazing? Concentric circles.
Yeah. That's right.
We're all concentric
circles. Let me share my connections with everyone as a way to introduce everybody. Okay. Mary Testa, you and I, the only time, really.
Yeah.
Was it the Oslo Theater, Nora Ephron's Love, Loss, and What I Wore.
That's right. Yeah.
And you, by the way, that experience was one of my inspirations to focus on doing something like this, a podcast show like this, because we all want our own dressing rooms, right? We've earned that. you stay in the business long enough, you get your own dressing room, maybe your name on it. But this was one of those situations where all the ladies dressed together. And all the, I did the one at West Side, too, right. And they, you know, we dressed in that little hallway. And it was so wonderful to chat, to realize how many connections we had with other people, other shows, and just girlfriend talk. Mm-hmm. And it's a way of, I felt, it was great for me, because it was a way of supporting me and my ideas and entertaining me.
Absolutely.
You know, sharing the stories, the fantastic stories.
It's so important for women to lift each other up. I just think
that's
it's really
right.
important.
And as you, and then, you know, years since that experience, I'm going, you know, nobody gave us a playbook for being women in show business for beyond 50 years old.
Nope.
You know, you have to kind of keep reinventing it. So anyway, and by the way, congratulations on the Tony nomination.
Thank you very much.
You're in Oklahoma still now, right?
Yes, still doing it. Yeah.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And you know, I didn't go back to see Mary because as a voter, you know, I'm trying to abide by the rules and everything. And of course, in that theater, if you've seen it, it's the audience is there. Jeez. And you know, and when I messaged you, you know, your speech at the end brought tears to my eyes, and that production, a couple things eluded me. Mm. But I love the fact that you can take material like that and interpret it in a way and bring other values
to it. That speech
is
gorgeous.
Yeah. Oh, my God, the way you do it, Mary.
And you're wonderful.
Just great. Well, thank you, ladies.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And all the other shows that we'll cover. And Susan Shulman.
Yes.
You know, you're just reminding me, because I thought we went back to Meryl Dubusky.
That's right.
I was How to Succeed.
Not on How to Succeed.
No,
but a little late. But Chorus Line.
I am a little older.
No, not much. But Chorus Line, I was one of those people sitting on the steps at the Newman Theater with Merle.
Oh, my
watching
goodness.
Chorus Line.
Wow.
So, right. What you were in his office then?
Yes, I was his associate.
And you just reminded me, of course, we got to know each other better at State Fair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you toured.
I did the pre-Broadway tour, Broadway, and then the post-Broadway tour, which you were not part of, but the...
Right.
So it was like a year's worth of
That was
drama.
Another year?
No, between the pre-Broadway and the Broadway.
Which she wrote this book.
Yes.
It's
wonderful.
Wow.
Yes.
You know,
there's a whole chapter about State Fair and David Merrick. Yes.
Oh, my God.
I want to just wheedle out some of those things, because we all have a different perspective when we're in the same situation,
right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that was just a really interesting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Company with Mary Bryant, who I adored. Mm-hmm. And I didn't meet you then, but...
No, I was a peon.
But
I got to work on Company and Follies, so that was pretty special.
This is what's so interesting about bringing, again, the show business element, you know, because you are part of the family and putting it all together. And as an actor, you know, being in the show, it's not that you don't want to be, you know, with you and talk and share, but it's like you got your blinders
you've
on, you're doing the work.
I've got my job.
And right, and nobody, I mean, reading this, and I thought I knew a lot, reading this shows me how much you, as a woman, mm-hmm. you know, do all these years, mm-hmm. you have to stand on your head and somersault and everything mm-hmm. exactly. to get things yep. done.
Yeah. Yes, you do sometimes.
So I'm
going to yes.
talk about that competitive thing, too. Mm-hmm. Because it's difficult being yep. in show business for more than 5 years, I think.
mm-hmm. yeah, you
and
can
Mercedes
say that again.
Ellington, oh, my God.
Well,
we go back. You might have
okay,
to remind
no, no,
me.
No, 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 no. I let me just say one yeah. thing, that you uplifted the dancer community up. Because before you and before Chorus Line, it was the dancers were relegated to being background, you know, mm-hmm. to being... scenery to mm-hmm. being, you know, but that the importance of the dancers and all the years of training that we go through,
yes, yeah.
and everything. When you came, that was
well, like, that's Michael know. Bennett's Valentine to yeah. dancers, you yeah. know, and we
but
just
even today, people yeah. refer to you as the
I know, I'm
absolutely.
Shocked.
Well, they should, yes,
but
they
I
should.
Will take it.
People
that's
need to remember,
yeah, absolutely.
That symbol.
And you
is,
said you were a June Taylor dancer,
yes.
Oh, okay,
oh
so
God.
Let me just delineate all of her occupations,
yes, please do.
Because there was a time, we probably took a lot of the same classes.
Yes, jazz classes.
Because there was a time in New York when I, you know, when I was a teenager and a little ballet girl from Michigan who ran away from home, but that's another story, another lunch.
We read that in your book.
So that's yeah. another thing. But anyway, yes. I was here, I was in New York, you know, and going to all those classes. And there was one point in time when I did my first Broadway show, How to Succeed. Mm-hmm. Meryl Dubusky and
Turkey Lurkey.
Where I felt so proud of the fact that I could walk down the street and I knew every single dancer in New York.
Oh, wow.
You know that feeling?
Yes.
Because
yeah.
you're in the mix, you're going
it's
to
like
class
being home.
Or in your show,
mm-hmm.
but every single dancer, so you start as yeah. a dancer. And I just sort of Googled, because I had no idea the, I know Sophisticated Ladies, 42nd Street.
Not Nanette,
which
Nanette
I saw.
And
I saw all the work you did on the Broadway stage. And then there's a fantastic memory I have of you with the Nicholas Brothers, who I was
my
a big
goodness.
Movie fan. And Mercedes, I'm just starting with what she does. I mean, that was, it was, in, but it's a beautiful, jewel-like memory of us being in London at the Palladium, and I don't know what the gala was for. It was
I don't remember.
It was for a,
it was so
a
many
benefit.
Organizations.
Yeah, for yeah. the English, you know, yes. actors, yeah. green room or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the Nicholas Brothers were there, mm-hmm. and I remember being in a rehearsal room in Covent Garden. I remember going up there and Fayard.
Yes.
I don't think he was able to dance, or no. was he? Maybe he was the first time because we did it.
Who's Fayard?
Fayard is one of the
Harold.
Oh, okay. Oh,
Harold
that's
and
his,
Fayard.
That's his first name.
So
yeah.
you
oh, okay.
did this.
Great.
You did this great number. I remember the three of you. You were in this. What was that number? Did
I
you
can't
choreograph
remember
that?
It, but it was.
She took care of them too.
He was
you
getting,
were.
Yeah, he was
you
getting
were like,
a little bit more disabled, mm-hmm. and we had to specify movement.
That's right. And I remember being in the room when Fayard would be sitting
yeah.
and Harold would be up there, you know, doing it. And Fayard would be just watching so that when he got up to do the performance at the Palladium, yeah. that gala, that he would know. Anyway, mm-hmm. I just loved that image of you taking care of them. You
well,
know, you were just like so, because you're an educator.
Still taking care, because it's like, went to the Copacetics and Honey Coles and mm-hmm. all
you
the
are,
people.
All the historian, I mean, I'm just getting in.
Wow.
Now, you are also a writer,
yes.
a director, a
yes.
choreographer.
Yeah. Cursed.
You, you created the Duke Ellington Center
for
the
Arts.
Arts.
Yeah, 501c3.
And some film on that, you know,
yeah.
enlightened me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I was with Andre de Shields
oh,
yesterday,
yes. yeah.
and Andre de Shields mm. does this, talks about you in such a loving way. And that's when I went, I just, my jaw dropped, because that's when he said something about the June Taylor dancers.
Yes.
And I used to go, because I was a Peter Gennaro dancer on
oh,
Ed Sullivan.
Yes.
And I went,
isn't
oh, my God.
Yes.
We're, so, but you were in Miami. Right.
Well, the first year...
but you were up there with the
Jackie
Taylor.
Gleason show,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, she
but
was on my, with Jackie Gleason.
My first year as a June Taylor dancer was the year that Kennedy was assassinated
wow.
here in New York. Then Gleason decided that because of his love of golf, he built a golf, on the
oh,
golf
right.
course, mm-hmm. the rehearsal studios, and we all moved down to Miami
wow.
Beach on the Great Gleason Express from that left from the beautiful, now destroyed Penn Station that they used to have.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we drove down, and I was very trepidatious about going because we have to go through the South. And so.
And this was after civil rights.
This was the year after.
But it wasn't quite in their mind. Right.
And he just decided he wanted to move down to Miami Beach. And so we got on this train, the Great Gleason Express.
I remember that. Newspaper articles about
Jilly's
all the catered, girls getting on the train.
And Jilly's catered the food, and Steve Lawrence was on with the Dixieland band. And so it was, you know, high time. And I'm going down. So they stop in the South. I won't say where. But they stop in the South for PR. And they said, we want everybody to go out on the platform, you know, and for pictures and to wave to the people and everything. And I didn't want to get out. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm having pictures of Billie Holiday's strange fruit hanging from the trees, you know.
Had you negotiated through that kind of stuff before in New York? Not really. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, New York was probably a little bit different.
Blatant, you know.
Yeah. But not as much as you.
So I'm standing there, and somebody from the back of the crowd yells out, what's that colored girl doing up there?
Oh.
So there we went, and I'm saying, I'm in for sure. I'm getting in back in the train.
Yes.
And before I could get in, Gleason reached his arm out and drew me under his armpit, and he said, you stay right here.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And he...
Were you the only black woman in the...
Yeah. You were... And I love the way Andre put it. You were an activist before you knew it.
It was
because you were just there.
I was
dancing.
Know, because
right?
We used to go to these auditions just to learn the combination, and the combination would be a free jazz class. You know, so we'd go, and most of the time, all the people of color, we knew we might not get the job, even for Broadway shows. So we'd go with like a club, and then we'd have coffee afterwards. But we had a free jazz class, you know, and it was a thing because. We had to keep our spirits up. And
so
going.
Yeah, that's a point in time that really interests me.
That's
because when I came to New York, because I was there when Sammy Davis integrated the with Golden Boy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There were no African American musicians.
And surely not. They didn't
in the
mix.
Pit.
They didn't mix us.
Right.
You know, it was like a black show, a white show. There
so
was no mixing.
That's what's interesting to me because I felt. As a young girl, a frightened young girl, acting like she wasn't scared, I was dealing with a lot of stuff. And one of the things I liked about New York and theater, once I was able to get into it, it felt like it created the aura of acceptance and tolerance.
Mm-hmm. Family.
It's an aura. Do you know what I mean? It's not maybe, you know, 100%.
Right.
They're layers.
But they're trying, you know.
How was it something that you and your friends understood when you went?
It was
that there
understood.
Wasn't the product out there that you could?
Well, I remember we all decided because Richard Kiley and Diane Carroll were doing a show called No Strings.
No Strings,
right?
Yeah.
And we said, well, Diane Carroll, maybe we have a shot. You know, let's go and audition. Joe Layton was the choreographer. So we went and we auditioned. And we were all prepared to get our coffee and go away, you know. But we just went to audition. And Joe Layton took us aside and he said, we don't know if Diane will agree to having other people of color because it might be a distraction from her stardom or whatever. And so
really?
We went to get coffee. So that was the key word, you know, we went to get coffee. So we went to get coffee, and then we came back, and he told us, he said, no, she doesn't think that it would be a good idea, so I'm sorry, but you are not going to be doing the show.
And he was the director?
The choreographer? He was the director, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Joe, who's great, but that was the temperature. I mean,
but it was not only that because in another show I wasn't hired, and I think Bjork did this show, and I won't mention his name. He didn't hire me because he said my last name. I didn't need to work. I didn't need the money.
What?
So, yeah.
Oh my God.
That's another insult.
The stupid has been running through for a long time. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yes.
It's just so, you know, because my first job, I mentioned another show, was when I got to New York, after I ran away from home, was to play before civil rights.
Yeah.
And I went, and it was like an eye-opening experience, because I remember traveling to my first, what they called then, the Negro colleges.
Yes.
And it was David T. Maher put this little dance troupe together. Mm-hmm. about seven people and one male singer. And so we did Martha Graham, we did ballet, we did Broadway, and we would play the South, like one-night stands in these colleges. God. We checked in the hotel, and I remember I'm like going to my first job, I couldn't get a taxi because I didn't understand what that meant. For colored only, for white only.
Yes, yes.
So I finally jumped in front of a taxi because I had my costume and the plastic and everything, and I was desperate to get there, and he stopped, and I said, I have to go to this college. And he was a black driver, and he kind of put two and two together. He said, get in, but you have to lie down.
Oh, wow.
Can't be seen mixed.
Yep. And I was on the floor, whatever it takes, and I'm holding my costume up like this so it doesn't wrinkle. He got me there, and of course, when I told George Wolfe this story, because I was going to put it in a show, he said, "I said, you know, he was protecting me." And I said, "He said, no, he didn't want to get shot.
Yes. Yeah.
He wanted me to get there, but so I went. Oh, yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah,
that's
but it was really so
there's some humor as well because like my grandfather was also touring the South and it was still segregated where you had to get in the back of the bus and so a group of the musicians before their performance they decided they wanted to take a tour of the city and so they got on board and amongst them was Barney Bigard who Barney Bigard is a reed player he's light skin straight black hair and very confrontational, but that's kind of goes with the personality of that instrument, but that's another thing.
Yeah.
So they get on the bus to see the sights before their concert that night, and Barney's decided he wanted to sit in the front of the bus opposite the driver, and the guy said, look, Barney, we got to go to the show tonight. Let's go. We have to go to the back of the bus because that's the rules down here. And Barney said, no, I'm going to be sitting. I'm sitting right here. And he just refused to move. And the guy said, well, we want to do the show tonight, so we're not going to be in jail. So we're getting to the back of the bus. So Barney sits down. And he was from New Orleans. And the driver noticed him sitting there. And the driver gets up and goes over to him and says, you have to sit in the back of the bus. And Barney said, no, I'm sitting right here. And the bus driver said, again, you have to go with your friends and sit in the back of the bus. So Barney said, no, I don't. I am Creole. And the driver says, I don't care how old you are.
Oh, my goodness.
So stupid. Ridiculous.
Oh, my God. So
unbelievable.
Sitting here, you were born and raised in New York, and you were born and raised in New York. How did that, and you're a Philly, I got that.
I was born in Philadelphia, but I was raised in Rhode Island.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was that like, you know, I'm always interested in, well, the question I tend to seem to be asking everybody is, you know, why do people do the things they do? How, what, as a child, where did you get the inspiration or made the decision to go in this direction, to make this commitment? What, you know, like Priscilla Lopez said, you know, watching television. And, and I watched the movies every Saturday with my mother and, you know.
I did that too with my mother, all the oldies.
And you're championed that way. So how was it for growing up in New York? You lived at home and were able to...
I lived at home, but I also... My parents loved the theater. They didn't have any money, but they used to go sit up in the cheap seats, which in those days you could get the... It was the precursor of the Tix booth. Mm-hmm. There was some drugstore, and you could get tickets for 50 cents.
Oh, my God.
And sit in the last row of the balcony.
Of course, tickets were only $2 then, right?
But still, they couldn't afford $2.
But still, yes, that was a lot.
50 cents was a big deal. And so they would always go to the theater. And so when my brother and I were little kids, I think I saw my first show when I was 5. And it was Flahouli, which was a big flop. But it starred, it had Bill Baird marionettes, you know, those life-size Bill Baird marionettes. And you were allowed to go backstage afterwards and meet the puppets. And I just remember, Barbara Cook. It was Barbara Cook's first show.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's right.
And Uma.
This is before Disneyland,
too. Uma Zumak, or whatever her name was.
Famous.
Right.
Backwards, yes.
But Barbara Cook's Broadway debut and the puppets. And I remember the puppets, of course. But I just remember thinking it was like magic. How could you go backstage and see what actually had been on the stage? I thought it was wonderful. And the next year I saw Peter Pan and I was a goner.
Oh,
wow.
And so I.
With Mary Martin.
With Mary Martin, who was my life.
And you worked with
Idol, and I sort of got to work with her later in life, but I adored her. But so I grew up with going to the theater, and I always loved it, and I never could imagine that there was a way for me to be part of it. I knew I wasn't tough
enough. Did you have dreams of being on stage?
Oh, I had done a lot of shows in high school and college like everybody, but okay. I mean, I knew I wasn't good enough. I knew I was like, okay, you know, I was okay. But I couldn't see a route to do it. And so eventually I did figure out that being a press agent used the skills that I did have, which were writing, and I knew about the theater, and I knew about it. You know, I'd been around it and I loved it. But I discovered that there was a place for somebody like me in the theater, which was inconceivable to me. And in fact, you mentioned Merle Dubusky, who was a very distinguished press agent that I worked for early in my career. And on matinee days, we would cover the shows. We would go in and out of all the shows and sort of check in and take everybody's temperature a little bit and set up things and do whatever we did. And one day Merle and I were going in and out of, and Merle had all these big shows, including A Chorus Line. And we would be going in and out of the stage doors, you know, right here where Sardi's is. And I remember he looked at me and he said, you're teasing me. And he said, you just love it, don't you? And I said, I do. And don't you ever make fun of me about it. Because growing up, it was inconceivable to me that I could walk into the stage door of a Broadway theater and have somebody say, hi, Susan. How could that be possible?
That's great.
And so it was kind of a miracle to me that somehow that I did find a place in the theater. And because it was not something...
Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey. Oh. Hello. It wasn't possible. I didn't know how you could do that and not be on the stage.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And so the first break was really... You just went up to his office and said...
I had actually worked... Before that, I had a wonderful experience. My really first big Broadway show was Applause. And directed by Ron Field. Oh, my goodness.
I know. A little bit of fraud.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
But never after six.
Right.
No, nothing after six.
No,
that's right.
Right. But now you can.
But now. Right. Yes. Yes.
But I worked on this big Broadway show that was coming to New York.
No ketchup? Sure.
Applause.
Called Applause, which was written by Condon and Green, directed by, thank you. Thanks.
Leroy Reams.
Leroy Reams was in it, Bonnie Franklin, Penny Fuller. It was directed and choreographed by Ron Field. And I was the lackey in the office. I was a little kid. And I was one of... a bunch of press agents.
Did you just go up to the...
I got a job with this press office called Bill Dahl. Was a very famous old-time...
Because you knew at this point you had put together
sort of
enough information
out, but
about...
I was a lackey. I mean, I was answering the phones and typing and doing lackey work. But I had the gene. I knew I had the gene. And so I was working along with everybody else in the press office on the production of Applause, which was Lauren Bacall.
And it
was
Bon Appetit, everyone.
Thank you.
The
last time I'm going to interrupt you.
No, that's all right. It's not that fascinating. It was written, this was a show created for Lauren Bacall, and it was kind of mirrored her life in some ways, and it was very much created around her abilities and her star power and everything. And I was, as I say, I was this little kid. I was about 22 or 23, and everybody was scared of Betty Bacall. Everybody, she was tough, and people were afraid of her. And so
she got these terrible nicknames like the Beast of Broadway.
Terrible thing. Not so much then, but later.
Okay.
But she was tough, and she'd been through a lot. She'd lost Bogart. She was in the process at that time of divorcing Jason Robards. Her mother had died. She'd had a tough life, and she was great. I mean, I loved her, and I was one of many people working on the show. But because everybody was afraid of her, she would ask if something was done. And because they didn't want to incur her wrath, they would say yes. And then she'd find out. There you go. And then she'd find out it wasn't done, and she'd kill them. But I, with the innocence of youth and, you know, naivete, she would ask me if something was done, and I'd say, I don't know, I'll find out, and if it's not done, I'll do it. I'll take care of it. And I wasn't being manipulative or anything. That's who I was. I mean, I was just an honest little kid. And the next thing I knew, I was called into the producer's office, Larry Kasha, and Joe Kipnis, and they informed this little pisher, this 22-year-old kid, that Miss Bacall had announced to the producers that the only person she would deal with, that she would speak to in the Bill Dahl press office was me.
Wow.
And so at the ripe old age of 22, I wound up handling what became the biggest hit show on Broadway.
Wow.
And it was crazy because it shouldn't have happened. You know, I mean, that was nuts. But I rose to it and...
But there are no rules, right?
But there were no rules, yeah. And she trusted me. And because exactly. She trusted me, and she was right. I was completely on her side. I mean, I thought she was wonderful.
And without, like you say, use the word manipulative, with just
no, you
being...
you just were doing your job.
I was
just being
exactly.
honest.
You, yeah.
That's when
how wrong with that?
You start the networking.
Years later.
Relationships, because it's all about...
Years later, somebody who worked in that office, who was much older than I was, said to me, How did you manipulate that? And I thought,
oh, you see?
I thought
manipulate. Was it a man that asked that?
No, it was a woman. Actually,
oh, okay.
Interesting.
Oh, no,
but the funny thing was, my response was manipulate that. I could barely get my clothes on right side out at that time. You know, yeah. I mean, I was a kid.
Yeah.
But because of Betty, and because I was an honest person, and I was doing
honesty
my best,
is the thing.
I suddenly was in this ridiculously responsible position of handling what became, you know, won all the Tonys, and she won the Tony, and the show won it, and it was a big deal. And this was 1970.
And you were, at that time also, before all of the influx of the social media, mm-hmm. you know, you were where the press agent,
yep.
before merchant marketing,
yep.
and
well, we
that's
did,
what I
we
meant
used to
say.
Do all that stuff.
You had to do
yep.
everything, yep. so it was really that those relationships you build. And, you know,
totally.
you yeah. Are the same way mm-hmm. as I am in terms of, my whole career, it's like, the ups and downs, you know what I mean? And I try not to get too down. Mm-hmm. But I respect the work so much. And being mm-hmm. in the room, as you do, it's like awards are wonderful, mm-hmm. you know, but it's like when you can go from job to job enough mm-hmm. and you're able to work with people who bring you back, like Michael John with
right.
you.
Mm-hmm. Who I adore. Yeah.
Who I love so mm-hmm. much. And it's really about the work. Any successful mm-hmm. person I've worked with, like Sondheim and Hal Prince, I could drop a lot of names. Mm-hmm. It really comes down, they all say the same thing. It's about the work.
Mm-hmm. You know, I just...
And John Doyle, who's one of my favorite directors, you know, he had this thing where in the room... That's where all that wonderful collaborative.
That's what I was
going
to say.
Yeah.
That's all of theater is a collaboration.
That's right.
And if you don't get that, then if you don't understand that, then mm-hmm. I don't think you're going
right.
to have longevity.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really
so the
don't.
Collaboration and the relationships
yes,
that you build.
Absolutely.
Right?
It's such
trust.
A great joy.
Exactly.
To do that, you
yeah.
know?
And so when people know you want to be in the room and you want to strip away, there's no ego, it's just all about creating something
right.
and creating the most beautiful thing you can.
And everybody has their job to do.
Exactly.
Yes.
When people know that that's what you do when you're a team player and that's what
right.
you do, they want to work with you.
Yeah.
They want that in the room.
Yep, 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 yep.
I had an acting, this is a little different, but I had an acting teacher who said Eli Wallach was hired all the time because people, the directors just liked having him on the set because he was such a
friend. Because he was fun.
Because he was
friendly.
Fun and he was probably
that's
smart.
Right. Yeah, he was good.
I knew him a little bit, but I had never worked with him, so I didn't know.
But you know, that's true of every single job in the theater. Well, probably in life too. But I mean, you know, if you have a choice of three costume designers, and one of them is just fun to be around,
mm-hmm.
and they're all equally talented, of course you want the one that's fun to be around. You know, someone like Pat Ziprod or somebody.
Yeah.
You know, of course you do.
Because it gets heavy out there
that's
on the road,
right. so
doesn't
you
it?
You want somebody that you feel a connection with and that you feel comfortable with and you feel a rapport with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true of every job, I think.
Right,
you know?
Right. So when, you know, when I did The Wild Party, Michael John, that was the first time I met him.
Yeah.
And he's, I don't know if I'm speaking out of school, but he has a special talent.
Mm-hmm. I think he's brilliant. But
I mean, but,
I, but I, that's
But
me.
Also the aura that he sees.
Mm-hmm.
He has which kind of falls into his talent, his artistry.
Mm-hmm.
His writing to me is just, you know, when I was over there, I mean, he loves you so much.
I've done five of his shows.
This day and age for a composer to create roles for
mm-hmm.
an actor isn't unheard of anymore.
You know? The thing
that's
about
right.
him is that he writes women's roles like nobody. He really does. He wrote me a show called Queen of the Mist, and they just did it in London and in Chicago. And I had a moment of... Because it was
mine.
It was written for me. It's mine.
Yes.
And, but then I thought, this is such a wonderful role for a woman over 40
mm-hmm.
that I have to go
share it.
Everybody has to
yeah.
Yeah.
be able to play it. And
but you will have always created it. I will. Just as Donna has always, you know, exactly. been with a person, that's and you exactly have, right. you know, yeah. that's yours.
So that's his, one of his many, his incredible talents is writing beautiful women's roles.
Yeah.
Really.
I remember when he was in London, when we were just opening, I said, you have to write, because his politics, I don't want to get into politics.
Yeah.
And ruin the lunch. But I said, you have to do the Trump opera. Excuse me, I'm choking.
Don't choke. Mm.
Yes.
Please.
That deserves a choke.
Yeah, exactly.
If anybody could do it, he could. Yeah, anyway, good. Moving right along.
No.
So Mary, when you were, so you were born in Philly.
I've stopped eating now to answer the question. Otherwise, okay. I'll just sit here and chat.
So
I was born in Philadelphia, but we moved back to my.
Did you start
parents.
Studying something like in the arts? When did you start go
you
for
know,
the arts?
It's funny. My mother was a singer, and we used to sing together in the house. And that's that. My high school didn't have a drama club. I was a teenager when I sort of went, you know, I think I want to be an actor or a lawyer.
Where did you get those ideas?
I don't know. Because I wasn't surrounded by it at all.
The lawyers are very good actors.
Yes, yes. Exactly.
Same.
And then
similar
I thought,
skills.
No,
yes.
If I am a lawyer, I have to go to school for a really long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think I'm just going to be an actor. And I just made a decision when I was like 16.
So you don't know where there wasn't any one specific.
No,
thing
my mother, who was a singer.
Yeah, yeah.
Not professional, but mm-hmm. wanted to be.
And you like the feeling of singing.
I guess I had a natural voice. I can tell you a story. We lived right across the street from a golf course. We lived right across, well, the house is still there. And it was right across from second hole tee off. And one day my mother went to the store, I think I was about 9, and she said, I'll be right back. And so I was singing some big number and just a big finish, and I heard applause, and there were like 10 men at the second tee off, and because I bowed, and yes, they heard it, and they applauded, and I was so like, oh my God, and I sat like under the window till my mother got home. Well, and that was my first like, hey, you know what, I think I could maybe do this.
This
is good.
Oh my God.
Funny.
That's a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming to New York, did you come with the purpose of auditioning, or do you had an apartment?
I went to school. I went to the University of Rhode Island. I had lived off campus, but I had never been out of Rhode Island. And I just decided, I majored in theater, and I finished my first semester junior year, and had taken all my theater credits. And I worked 3 jobs for a summer and saved up, I think I saved up like $1,000. And I said, I'm going to just move to New York. And I moved to New York in 1976. And the apartment building that I moved into, I'm still in today.
Oh,
and
gosh.
I just went, I'm just going to do it. And I did. And I was fortunate in that I worked in college with a writer who suggested me. Well, I met Bill Finn when I was in college.
Okay.
Finn.
Oh, that's good.
Wow. Yeah. And so when I moved here, we started really basically singing with Bill, me, Allison Fraser, and Kay Pesek. And In Trousers came about, which was the first mm-hmm. Bill Finn show.
Wow.
But I got my equity card because this writer that I had worked with in college recommended me to a director named Steve Robman. Do you remember him?
He's a friend of mine.
Yes. And he was directing a production mm-hmm. of The Rose Tattoo at the Long Wharf Theater. And he recommended me. Mm-hmm. I went in and auditioned, and I got like the one mm-hmm. of the neighborhood women.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got my equity card. So things would just
probably
fall.
$150 then.
I don't even remember.
Maybe
I don't even
not.
Remember. But yeah. That was around like 79, 80.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's.
Wow, never stopped.
You
work as much or more than any woman I know.
Oh, well, that's nice.
You,
well,
you know.
Whenever people say that to me, I go, I have to pay my bills.
Well,
thank
yeah,
you
I mean, and, you know, that's it's fantastic. But it's a testament to the way you work and what that you're up there always being truthful, you know.
I'll try.
And,
isn't that the point?
Yeah, it
I
is.
I think so. Yeah. Thank you.
So,
I
sure,
appreciate that.
Sure. there was something I wanted, you know, in this, I'm going to bring this up because it's like we're talking about, you know, the when I was raised, you know, in the Midwest in the 50s, you know, there was an article I read 2 weeks ago in the New York Times about women who are now very successful professional women, not in show business, they're having like a delayed reaction to that. The Me
yes.
Too culture. Uh-huh. Did you read that mm-hmm. article?
Yes, and I totally identified with it.
You know, and it's and yeah. it kind of like when I use the word negotiate through things, whether you're mm-hmm. you're discriminated against or mm-hmm. as a woman of color or a woman, mm-hmm. it's like there are certain things that when I came to New York, scared kid. But I kind of, because I was raised a certain way with the movies, with television, that I kind of accepted the yeah. status quo.
Yes.
Do you know, it's kind of, I kind of.
That's what happens.
And yeah. you learn, nobody taught me or told me. I just had to learn by watching, observing, mm-hmm. that my place I have to be very quiet and mm-hmm. private and mm-hmm. secret and just find my way mm-hmm. to what I
right.
need to do mm-hmm. what I want.
Yep.
Coming to New York, it was, I mean, I remember. I want to pass this over to you guys, if mm-hmm. you have any, because it's kind of funny, and I don't want to say the name. I'd love to say the name. Maybe
oh, I wish you would.
Remember Louis Shure, the big agent?
No, I don't know him.
The name.
The name.
Okay. Well, it's funny. It was I got out of there, but, I mean, it was like a B-movie. Mm-hmm. I remember going for this interview, and it was one of those big desks, and I literally was talking to him as he was approaching me, and I circled that desk in his office twice before I went out the door. It's mm-hmm. like one of those... It's like
sounds
a cartoon.
Funny, but it wasn't at the time, mm-hmm. I'm sure.
No.
And
it was
I just
scary.
And then it was terrifying. Mm-hmm. I was, oh, okay, maybe yeah. another time. And I don't know. And I'm out of there. And then you just kind of breathe in, breathe out, and you just go, well, that's what I'm up against. Mm-hmm. And you don't report anything. You mm-hmm. don't complain. You don't, you know, because no
and
one's
who
gonna,
would you have complained
no,
to?
So know? I'm just putting that mm-hmm. out a little mm-hmm. bit because I just started thinking about all, you know, growing up in New York, the near misses. Mm-hmm. Did you have any trouble with that kind of the sexist?
I certainly have.
Yeah, and as
fact,
a woman.
In fact, I wrote about it in the book, and I didn't plan to. It's funny, but I had a photograph. I handled a show called The Merchant, which was the show that Zero Mostel died during.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you know it wasn't.
And you were doing that,
and
yeah.
I was the press agent. So you know it wasn't a happy experience on any level.
Right.
But the fact that he died during it was kind of the cherry on the cake in terms of it being a terrible experience. But during the course of this production, which was 1979, I think, Zero Mostel was fabulous on stage and not so fabulous off stage. Was known to be someone who did somewhat inappropriate things on stage and embarrassed people. And you know, anyway, I had set up a photo shoot for Zero Mostel for Q Magazine, which was the precursor to New York Magazine. And at the end of the photo shoot, the photographer said, oh, let's take a picture of all the people that made it happen. And so it was his dresser and somebody else and me, and I sort of knelt down next to him. And just before the shutter clicked, apropos of absolutely nothing, he leaned over and grabbed my breast.
Oh, God.
And it happens that I have a photograph, which is, as it happened, I'm sort of shoving his hand away.
Oh.
Apropos of nothing. I
yeah.
mean, just because he could.
Right.
And I always had this picture, and people would say, what's that? And I would tell them the story, because it was just something that had happened to me. Did it ruin my life? Was I scarred for life? Of course not.
You but, just get up and you go,
but
okay,
you go
that
on.
Happened.
But looking back, you think, you know, people that are coming out now with stories about inappropriate behavior that happened along, people are saying, well, why didn't you say something? And mm-hmm. I get furious, because who would have cared?
Yeah,
who would
right.
I have told? The man I worked for.
And you would have hurt your reputation.
I
they would have
been
checked
fired.
You off. Yes.
But I mean, who would I have told? The man I worked for, the press agent, he couldn't have cared less.
Right.
The producer of the show, I would have been fired. I mean, mm-hmm. there was nothing, there was big Broadway star, little pissant press agent. There was nothing equal about the power that we had.
Right.
So did it ruin my life? No. But did it happen?
But how do you, but then, well, that, yeah.
Well,
so
this
how
is the
do
thing.
You deal
so,
with it?
So I didn't deal with it. And I didn't, I mean, I just went on because there was mm-hmm. nothing. I mean, as I say, it didn't ruin my life, but it was so inappropriate. And he was just being a pig. There was no reason for this. And I was a kid, you know, like, it was just such a...
So you chalk it off of
yeah.
you. That's
but the interesting thing was years and years later, when I wrote this book, I sent that chapter, which was about The Merchant and about Mostel and this kind of awful experience of this entire production, which was disaster-ridden. And I sent this chapter to this person that I had been working for at the time. And this was in 2013. And he read the, and I said, tell me if there's anything I've forgotten or did I miss anything. I want it to be accurate and because it's a long time ago. And he called me up and he said, and it didn't refer to anything else in the chapter. This is just a very small incident in an overall chapter, quite long. And he said, oh, don't you think he was just funning?
Oh, God, no.
And this is in 2013.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is the person I would have gone to and said, excuse me, this pig just did something in it.
How about we grab you in the balls?
That's right.
You
exactly.
Said, oh, I was just funny.
I was just funny. Exactly. And so if that was the reaction now.
Well, sorry, am I not supposed to say that?
No, well, too bad.
It's too late.
But true.
It's too late now.
So people that say, well, why didn't they come forward? Who would have cared? Nobody would have cared.
No.
And nobody would have done anything.
Exactly. And it's almost the same way today.
Well, it's not so much better now, but I mean, then there was not.
But the women of that era, or you know, that
of our
time, we had to like really just be aware,
and
we couldn't really.
And the funny thing is, everybody that reads my book comments on that particular story. It's a very small story in a very long, you know. But it hits a chord with people,
yes,
because so many people have experienced things that were just inappropriate, mm-hmm, about power, about, you know, whatever, that were just wrong and that we had to deal with.
It falls into the fact that you have to choreograph yourself.
That's right. You have to
look
figure it out.
Look around the room,
exactly,
see the situation, mm-hmm, where's the door, where's,
mm-hmm,
the bathroom,
mm-hmm, yep,
and see that you
and
can
how do I
have
deal
an
with
escape
it?
If
yep
necessary, and
uh-huh,
who's in the room. And you just choreograph yourself, mm-hmm, like that. And mm-hmm, it's ridiculous, you know,
yeah,
because why should you have to be aware of that? You're concentrating on
it's a terrible
on
way to be,
yeah,
not to
just
be professional, free to
yeah
be.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah,
and that's another thing that they can hold against you and then say that you're not professional.
Mm-hmm. And that's why that article in the Times, when I read it, I thought I'd kind of resolved those, mm-hmm, conflicting feelings, like why didn't you take care of yourself,
uh-huh,
or why didn't you protect yourself better? You know, and I just went, oh, I haven't really. I'm mad.
Yeah,
well,
of course.
Women.
Yeah,
that's
I'm
what
really
this article was about. These women. And these
I didn't
these
see
were,
this article.
Yeah.
Where, in the Times,
so about 2 weeks
ago. Yeah,
but it was these were very established, prominent women in their fields. They were lawyers, and I mean, they were very established, you know, credentialed people, and every one of them said, you know, I've never gotten over the fact that this happened to me, and I didn't do anything about it,
no,
or I couldn't do anything about it. And exactly that, you do think about those things and you think, well, why didn't I just knock his teeth out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why didn't I just haul off?
And
but
and
you couldn't.
The
no
value now, the value
yeah
now is to, since I read it, it's like, well, bringing it, just
uh-huh
sharing a
uh-huh
little bit here, but also for myself to just adjust my perspective a little bit, you know,
mm-hmm,
and to have a little compassion for
yes
myself.
Yes, exactly.
And don't blame
because
yourself.
No, because
that's exactly
that
right
that what that's what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We were having a conversation in the dressing room
because I was that way growing up in the 50s and
mm-hmm
60s,
yeah,
and I
women
just let
speak
people
so badly to themselves.
Yeah,
mm-hmm,
and it's inherent. And the sooner we stop doing
right
that, the more empowered I think we become.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Because
no,
we're always take
no
the blame for everything.
Right.
We're
right
always like, well, that
mm-hmm
must have been my fault.
Mm-hmm.
Or, well, I'm, you know,
yeah,
I'm this, so
mm-hmm
that's why
yeah
this. And we need to really stop
yeah
that.
That's the nurturing part of, like, the mothering part of women, too, goes to solve the problem
yeah
or, you
that's
know what
a,
I mean?
That's right, yeah.
Take care of somebody else.
Well, and also we were raised in a certain way with a certain set of mores and rules, and they did have to do with, you know, being raised to be a wife and a mother and to, you know, fill certain requirements within a family unit and stuff. And then somewhere along the line, the rules changed. I mean, Wendy Wasserstein had a wonderful line that she wrote about that she was raised to marry a doctor.
Hmm.
And when she was somewhere in college, she was supposed to be the doctor. You know, she was supposed to
yeah
become
right
the doctor.
Right,
like
right,
the rules changed. And,
yeah,
and, you know, we were all kind of in that generation where suddenly everything shifted a little bit. And
yeah
and we didn't have to kind of do that, but we sort of did.
And you could stop
but
apologizing for
and you
living.
Could maybe
right
stop,
exactly
and you could
right
be a little bolder and braver and more forceful, but there was also a part of you that said, well, don't rock the boat and don't,
mm
you know, don't be too pushy and don't be too this, you know, and so there's always that
yes
that mixed signal that came.
Mm-hmm.
And but I love that Wendy Wasserstein line because
that's
it's true.
True.
Yeah. Suddenly
yeah,
the
true,
rules,
yeah
the ground shifted a little bit in those years.
Well, there's racism, there's
yep
feminism,
mm-hmm
and now there's ageism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going through the
mm-hmm
shifts
that's right
of
and
the
this
addition
is, like, again, you
mm-hmm
know, I keep wondering myself. I go, well, nobody, I never went to university, but I don't think they'd have a course for what do you do at a certain age. I'm into my 70s, you know, and a dancer's life is short, but I want to keep moving with Dance Illusion as much as I can.
I love that.
As long as I can.
I love that.
No, but everybody used to ask my grandfather when he was going to retire, and he said, retire to what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't retire. Mm-hmm. So I just gave a speech the other day to the Zena Ramet floor bar people. They're having a conference. And I said, no, don't take that word out of your vocabulary. I've talked to everybody in my building. I said, the retire doesn't exist. Say segue.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Segue from one thing
but
to another.
Mercedes, you are like, in my mind, a shining example. Do I have something here?
No, me. Oh. I'm spitting on myself.
This is what women do. She's like,
yeah, I know, right?
You are the shining example of someone who lives the way she speaks, and you never stop. You keep going. You go strong. It's like we're bumping into each other, not a lot, but it's steps. And she's always like starting ballroom, and you're teaching.
Yeah, now I'm in the ballroom dance.
And she's like, you know, and I'm going to follow your lead because I'm not, you know, I don't do I don't do windows or jumps anymore.
No, exactly.
Nor should you.
I can do a turn.
You can do samba.
Can you just point at it? You know, you say,
but I can still move my hips, and I can do it. I love Latin rhythm, so I'm going to, you know.
And that's how I got to go to Cuba in March. We went to Cuba for a ballroom dance competition.
Mm, wow.
And my partner's my teacher.
Oh, my God.
And we came back with
great.
2 silver, 2 gold, and a trophy.
Wow.
Bravo. Mm.
Good for you.
I wanted to go to Cuba because that's the one place in the whole world that my grandfather never got to because of the Cuban Missile Crisis. But they were on their southern tour, and they were just about to go there, and everyone was called back to the United States.
Oh, that's a shame, because he wanted to go there.
He wanted to go there, but now Wynton Marsalis is going there, and he's got some members of his band.
That's right, he has a whole... Did they have an exchange?
Yes, yeah. And I want to go back and take a band and create a band.
Oh, my gosh. You'll do it, because you...
Oh, yeah.
You have a book...
Yes.
And you have another one coming to be done?
Rizzoli keeps asking me to... do an autobiography, and I'm like...
You have to, don't you think?
But it's like I'm stuttering. I'm saying, blah, 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 blah. Where do I begin?
You know, I know.
And it's so much to cover without the emotions rushing up in you. I admire people who write books and don't get overwhelmed information.
I couldn't. I had to have someone help me with that. I mean, just to organize. I mean, I did 80% of the writing of it, but I needed the help of a professional writer to just get the chapter, the kind of organize, and you can talk into.
Yeah, you talk into a recorder and just tell stories.
Yeah. Or be with someone. I tried to do that with Bill Shelby. Bill Shelby was a press agent. You
right.
know, remember,
I remember Bill.
A dear friend.
Yeah.
Do you remember Bill?
Doll. Yeah.
And I would sit with him once a week. I was trying to record him
once
with my little cassette.
Yeah.
His stories, they're fantastic, the oral history. But anyway, that...
Yeah, because I've got three pieces of titanium in me, and I'm still, like, shoving myself around, like, when I put my ballroom dance shoes on. Like
right.
There, one of the pieces, like my toe replacement, is out of place, so
oh
I have to
my
kind of
God.
Put it in the thing. And it's ridiculous, you know. So that's why I feel very akin to when I see movies like WALL-E. I'm very, you know, I feel like I'm part of WALL-E's family.
You've got all that. You've got a
toe replacement and two knees. Yeah.
Wow. And you're dancing.
Yeah, I refuse to give
Thank
up.
Thank God for technology.
I know.
Right?
God.
I think it's great.
Now, can I bring up one thing about, you know, your... I was listening to Andre DeShields, know, in that little
Puppy
film
Dearest.
That the Columbia University honored you with a Lifetime Achievement Award, but you're still going. and your trip to Russia, that was so fascinating to me because what year was that? Do you remember?
71.
When the Duke Ellington and his the full band.
We followed Alvin. Alvin Ailey went first
on a
State
Department
tour.
Was he the first American company of dancers
I
to go there?
And then we were selected to do... you know, another 5-week State Department tour. I was doing No, No, Nanette at the time. And I begged and pleaded because at that time, Actors Equity only allowed you 1 week a year as a vacation.
Yeah. Wow. And now it's still very different.
So I begged them for two years. And
two
so
years.
I had 2 weeks to go on a 5-week. And so we went to Moscow. We went to Minsk. We went to Rostov-on-Don, Kiev and what was then Leningrad. And it was, there's several stories about this because it was so weird. The musicians, you know, they're a special breed. You have to talk to them on another level because yeah. they're not human beings, actually. But we went on a plane. I was so restless. I couldn't even sleep on the plane. I was walking around and so excited because I insisted on going because in my early years, I had wanted to be a ballerina.
Right. You were a ballet girl.
Yeah.
Juilliard, right?
I graduated from Juilliard, but in my time, there were no ballerinas of color. So I had to segue.
Before Arthur Mitchell and the...
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So we're on the plane and everybody's having a great time and the musicians are cutting up and carrying on and we land and as we land, the people who were waiting for us, we didn't know it's that many people, they broke the police barrier. They ran out to meet the
Russian
plane. The Russian
public.
People are running and they were running alongside the plane that's taxiing in and we're saying, they're going to get run over, you know, they have to move. And from that point on, it was... They took us to our hotel. They threw our bags in the lobby, took us off to see four acts of Swan Lake. After that long-ass, excuse me, trip
I said balls,
to Russia.
So I said
know.
Balls. Yeah, you're
but
right.
Four acts of Swan
four
Lake.
Four acts of Swan Lake. And you were like this, you yes. know, trying to keep your... With the
Bolshoi competition
company.
Already. We mm-hmm. got a Swan yeah. Lake
unbelievable.
For you.
Now, Duke Ellington used to play at the piano, and he'd have a glass of Coca-Cola on the piano. And he put sugar in it. This is his B12. I don't know. And so one of the promoters, Phoebe Jacobs, she wanted to make sure that we had Coca-Cola with us when he went. So she called up Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola did not return her call. So she said, well, Joan Crawford was a very big fan of Duke Ellington's, and she was married to Pepsi-Cola.
Right.
So yeah. That's right. Get the Pepsi-Cola and send the Pepsi-Cola. Do not show him the can, and maybe that will be, you know, a substitute.
He will drink it with all that sugar.
He'll just think it's the water, you know, whatever. And so from that transaction, Pepsi-Cola got the contract to bring Stolichnaya, the first Russian wow. vodka, back to the States.
Oh, isn't that neat?
And Stolichnaya, Pepsi-Cola became the first American soft drink in Russia.
Wow.
So, wow.
It was all because of that stupid trip. It wasn't a stupid trip. But it was breathtaking. I mean, the
did
people.
Did you love it, though? Did you?
I was.
Did they must have loved the orchestra.
They,
Duke.
They were standing at the edge of the stage.
Yeah.
They were back.
It's been thrilling.
And they had each of these people, they had musicians. They had groups of people who were musicians who had heard the individual instrumentalist on the Radio Free America, and they were emulating. So we had people who played their saxophone like Paul Gonzalez or Johnny Hodges or trumpets, the Cat Anderson, or the different, so each of them like selected a musician that they wanted to emulate, and they were there and they came with their instruments and they had backstage jam sessions and
thrilling. It's thrilling.
It was unbelievable. But what the music will do, you know, how the music will keep the
this
people
is why
coming together.
I say a grateful prayer every day that I can work with music every day.
Yeah. Yes.
Singing or listening.
It's so
in a world
primal.
That's kind of topsy-turvy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. So let me just add a point. Are you... is this a new thing, Ellington at Birdland? Is that something you're
this is a thing,
initiating?
Yeah. The Ellington name was always associated with Birdland, and they were looking for new programs.
That's a new program that you're doing,
so
right?
So we've done the two concerts so far and a couple of coming up. We do it on a monthly basis. So the first one was Tap Ellington. The second one was Ellington on Broadway, which we did excerpts from Sophisticated Ladies and Play
Fantastic.
On.
Fantastic.
And then we're coming up on Sacred Sunday, which is the sacred concert music. And so there's all these different suites that he had. He had the Shakespearean suite. He had Afro-Eurasian Eclipse, the Queen suite. He wrote a
right,
suite
every
time
country,
he
traveled,
you know. And
wow.
so it's a lot of music.
That's fabulous. I want to be there.
Okay.
I'm
going to let you know.
You get different. Who's in the group?
Depends.
Just people
like,
that
I'm hoping to get Stokes to do the Shakespearean thing.
Oh, God.
And create something that he can, you know.
He can do anything he wants.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there's like a lot of different situations. Like we're going to be doing the Nutcracker around Christmas because it was the Billy Strayhorn Ellington Nutcracker. and the take on it is very jazzy, so we'll use tap
dancers. Is that Strayhorn's arrangement?
It's both of them. Both of them. And we have tap dancers and ballroom dancers involved, and I'm trying to get the ball. I'm trying to rearrange the place because Birdland is not that big, you know.
No, it's
and
long.
And so when you mention
something
about...
Will you be downstairs in the theater or upstairs?
Oh, the new one.
No, upstairs.
No, upstairs.
Upstairs is the old one. They have a new downstairs.
Yeah, see,
the
I don't
downstairs.
Even know.
Yeah, no, yeah. The new... it's a smaller space.
The downstairs space.
No, the upstairs.
No, the downstairs space is actually
really?
Smaller than the upstairs. Yeah.
Oh.
I thought it was going to be bigger.
Oh.
But...
Wow.
It's
okay.
Not. So now we're trying to figure out how to get the gospel choir in the space.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For
just
the
set them
sacred
all over.
Sunday. You know I'll find a way.
You know
yes,
find
I know
way.
You will. Oh, that's great. Congratulations.
Wow.
And what's up for everybody coming up?
I was just going to say before we get to that, when we talk about concentric circles, how, you know, our lives, we may not have worked together, but we kind of were around each other. And when you mentioned Dance Theater of Harlem, I was the press agent for the first 5 years of Dance Theater of Harlem. And Arthur Mitchell sort of plucked me out and said, I want you to be my press agent. And, you know, here I'm this little white Jewish girl from New York. And, you know, Arthur Mitchell, who was the most charismatic human being alive. And, you know, whatever he said, you would do because it was Arthur Mitchell.
He was so certain.
Oh, my God, he was
confident.
Wonderful.
Yes.
He was just the most amazing man.
I loved him.
I adored him.
We took speech lessons together, Marion Rich.
Oh, he was wonderful.
Yeah, this is somebody I don't know.
He created
Arthur
the Dance
Mitchell.
Theater of Harlem.
Okay.
Yes. And he
you
created,
know,
he was one of the first people.
I remember.
He was the first person of color in City Ballet, New York
right.
City Ballet.
And
Balanchine.
Hence,
and he was he was a City Ballet.
Huge star, and then he
but I remember he was, just at the beginning, when it was still an idea that mm-hmm. he was gathering mm-hmm. his friends
mm-hmm. yes.
on the Upper East Side to be,
Cecily
you know,
Tyson
on the board of directors.
Was one of the first people.
And, mm-hmm. And he choreographed a thing for a few dancers mm-hmm. in Lincoln Center, and I was, mm-hmm. you know, great, mm-hmm. fortunate to be one of them, and I just... fell in love with him because he was hilarious. He
yes,
and Melissa
he
Hayden
mm-hmm.
were great friends,
mm-hmm.
and he was just so down to earth and funny. And then I went, wow, that's a very serious
yeah.
Endeavor, you know, to create a ballet company. But what he did was so brilliant is that, and it's still going.
Yes, yes, in fact.
That he created the school, which is what mm-hmm. you have to do to establish that, to bring...
Right.
The urban, you know, the kids mm-hmm. in...
Because at that time, there were so many things that were happening. I remember the Urban League sent me to Radio City Music Hall to audition for the then Corps de Ballet, which they used to have.
Oh, my God, another one. Did you do it?
They.
That was one of my first things.
They didn't...
Because?
Because of color. But they didn't say that, but...
Yeah.
That was sent as a test. They wanted to test them to see if they would.
What about Juilliard? When you were doing classes, what about the kids in your class?
Well, were they brought up in like a cocoon. You know, we mm-hmm. did not have any awareness of the outside world. We had fabulous teachers, Anthony Tudor, Martha Graham herself,
but
Jose
you had kids
Limon.
Of color in,
wow.
in your class?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody.
But they were
totally integrated.
But they were accepted.
They were accepted in the school areas, but when you mm-hmm. once graduate, you go out
into
the real world,
right.
forget about it.
Right.
You know?
Well, our author used to talk about that, how when he was training he wasn't at SAB, he was at the High School of Performing Arts.
Yes, PA.
And how really there was no place for him to go, you
mm-hmm.
know, and that, you know, when Balanchine said, come study with me, it was such a fluke because nobody else had ever had that opportunity before him.
Well,
and boy,
I also have to attribute something to my mentor, Donald Sadler, because mm-hmm. Donald Sadler...
Yes, Donald,
yes.
We have that in common.
Yes,
yeah.
Did No No Nanette, and he saw me in Florida with the June Taylor dancers, and he asked if I would be interested in... I said, are you kidding? You know? I mean, you know, in those
sure.
days, you used to try to get at as much work as you could to collect unemployment.
Sure.
I mean, this is the high aspirations you had just to get
mm-hmm.
enough work to collect unemployment. And so I said, well, let me see how many weeks that would be, you know, and I'm figuring out. And so after Gleason closed, stopped doing the Jackie Gleason show, I came up and auditioned for No No Nanette, and I got it, so.
And then you were his assistant.
Yes, I was his associate in a lot of different projects.
And boy, didn't
and
you
protector.
Love him?
Oh,
what a
God,
gentleman!
Fabulous.
Did you know
no,
Donald
I didn't
Sadler?
Know
did you marry
him?
No.
I
Chuck Lorre. I had never met him.
Yeah. You know, we did Follies together, then he choreographed and directed a musical I did that we at the Lucille Lortel Theater.
Yes.
Sheba, and when we did Follies, he would bring in, and he loved to share the pictures of the early days of ABT.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
With Jerome Robbins and Harold Lang, and
now I've got all that in my storage room.
Oh my goodness!
I have storage rooms that is as much as my apartment.
You have to,
and it's collecting and collecting, and then another.
Well, I know you'll do the right thing with it because
she does. Everybody gives me their stuff. I got stuff from Bobby Short. I got stuff from June Taylor. I got two of Peggy Lee's gowns.
Oh my God! Got to call Katie Huffman.
Yeah, exactly. Katie's doing the Peggy Lee show.
Oh, God.
Wow, that's
amazing. I mean, I just loved him, and that's fantastic, because I love those pictures of seeing Robbins and Harold Lang. Mm-hmm. And
He used to put them all up against on the top of the mirrors when we were rehearsing.
And so and, of course,
Marge
Champion. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Marge, dealing with aging, he was one of my inspirations, too. Because now I'm doing Pilates because Donald did it, and I'm getting, you know, off an injury and getting strong again. But the Pilates thing, and I remember him doing it, and he and Marge Champion would go rent a studio, and they did a little film about it, and they would do their routines, and, you know, just an elegant.
You just have to keep moving. They can't hit a moving target.
That's right.
I also like to say you have to confound people, because my favorite thing to hear from people is, I didn't know you could do that. Mm-hmm. And all of us have such capabilities, like a broad range of capabilities.
Like making biscuits in Oklahoma.
Exactly. No. So I don't do that.
Well, okay, but this is the illusion.
But we have so much.
We can't be pigeonholed.
And we're always being pigeonholed. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's what you do? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what you're always going to do.
It's a safety factor, right?
Yes. So you have to confound them.
Ellen used to say beyond category. And that's the title that he gave Ella Fitzgerald. She's beyond category. She could sing anything.
That's exactly right. That's I like to think of myself that way.
Yes.
Because I can do lots of things that I haven't been asked to do yet.
The Elephant Gerald
of
Broadway.
Why think you're done when you've got this ocean
and
of stuff?
And you have a book or two.
Well,
or
I don't know that I'll ever write a book, but...
But you haven't.
Why stop yourself? Why stop yourself? Yes. You know what I mean?
Because, I mean, when I think of you, I think funny and big voice and all those things. And here you are in Oklahoma playing... a completely different character than I've ever seen you do.
Right.
And there's a real heart and a warmth and a soul, and you're seeing a whole different shade in that show.
Well, I like to think that I've done that in a lot of shows.
I'm sure you have, but I mean, you know, it's sort of the big picture kind
of thing. Well, that's what everybody thinks of me, that I'm funny and I have a big voice.
That's right.
But you know what I love about you, one of the things I love about you, Mary, is that the way you were so generous in talking to someone. I read this somewhere about... the way you work, and about especially this role, because I love, it's like, that was very helpful, because I like to do that too. She, tell me if I'm wrong, or you tell me.
Yeah, no.
You take a character, someone was interviewing her, and you talked about, you take a character, and you decide what the similarities are.
Oh, okay, yes.
With yourself. You start with yourself, and the elements in the character, the parts of the character's character that you can relate to, fit in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the imagination takes play,
and then
what,
you find the differences.
You're grounded, but it's just a beautiful way of creating a total person.
And I think you have to start with yourself as an actor in order to see what, you know, how it resonates with you. You can't, like, just fake.
Then you can have those leaps of faith.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Oh, that's nice. Thank you.
Yeah. People talk about how they work, sometimes it gets tedious and boring, but I thought that was very clear, and it's a very good thing to, you know, to adhere to, I think.
Yeah. You're very good about sharing your gifts, too. I remember during State Fair, you were this major Broadway star, and you were, you know, playing.
No.
I mean, you know, with this sort of legendary career and everything. And I remember you gave dance classes to the kids in the chorus. And I thought,
the yoga.
And I just remember thinking, they were thrilled. You know, it was just a lovely,
well, that was,
generous,
you know,
nice thing to do.
Well, look, she invited us here today.
That's right.
Yes,
we're getting hamburgers.
And we're getting food.
That was an example of, we could go on because I have David Merritt question, but I know we have to end at some point. But that was a show that, like a lot of shows that don't make it, mm-hmm. the cast, it was a kind of a very loving family.
Well, I think all Broadway shows, you create a family.
Yeah.
I think all shows, but, yes. you know,
yes,
Broadway
sometimes, are sometimes they're better than others. Sometimes yeah. they're more loving. Yeah. And that yeah. was a particularly
and it was a
generous,
shame that
lovely
we couldn't take
cast.
It all the yeah. way with it. But
yeah. I'm still friends with a lot of people in that show.
I have a show with Andrea McCardle.
Uh-huh. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yes.
Keep it going.
Yeah.
Well, as we're winding down, are you guys, anything you want to...
Well, I thank you for asking.
Oh, yes.
Part of this. I'm very honored to be part.
This is great.
With Mercedes, with Susan,
we've got famous, what's her name?
No.
No, you can't do that anymore.
That's what I'm talking about.
No, you're right. You're right. I'm sorry. I apologize.
You opened my eyes because I thought, have I not paid attention or something?
To the press agent over there.
Well, yeah. Because I thought, they work... I mean, the stuff they do for the show.
We all have a part of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We all have
absolutely.
A role.
Yeah.
So you don't need to ever, as
no,
your
no,
friend,
no, no.
diminish
well,
your...
No, and that's partly why there was a book.
I was telling you that mm-hmm. if I ever get into trouble, I'm not going to a lawyer. I'm going to the press.
Yeah.
Well, on that note... Yes. Cheers, ladies.
Cheers.
Thank you for inviting us.
Cheers.
Champagne. Wait a minute. I can't quite do it. Here we go.
Okay, even though it's...
Thank you. Lovely to chat with all of you. How
yes.
nice.
It's been wonderful.
Onward and upward, I say.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We ain't dead yet.
Can I finish eating?
Yeah.
I'm starving.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.